Hello and welcome to the post-primary edition of the Texas Tribune Tribcast. I am reporter Elise Hugh, joined by Tribune CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Good morning or good evening, Elise.
Hello.
Figure out which it is.
Right, exactly. Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Hello, Elise.
And Ben Philpott, who covers the governor's race for the Texas Tribune and KUT News. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. So, Ben, I just dubbed you the governor's race reporter. So
there you go.
Why don't you go ahead and start? You were with Perry last night at his victory
party.
It was
a tough gig, wasn't it? Where'd you have to go? It was a horrible place, right?
It was the Salt Lick out in Driftway.
He doesn't like pork unless he eats it.
That's right. You know, and I will say that the Republicans actually allowed the press to eat some of the food.
They fed you.
They did.
Take a taster. It's
easy to be generous when you're winning.
That's right. And boy, were they winning. I mean, you didn't have anybody around there biting nails or wringing hands. There were a few people that kind of stared at the screens, which they had dozens of all over the place, a little too long. But, you know, from the moment the early returns came in and then you saw the trend just remain, he was above 50%, and, you know, the party set in. And they were ecstatic. They were excited. They were ready to. They clapped a lot louder about the idea of party unification than the supporters did at Kay Bailey Hutchison's campaign, and you know, they're ready to run on now. And despite the three different people that I asked, none of them believe that he will then run for president.
Well, they must have liked it that Hutchison conceded the race before it was certain that there wasn't a runoff.
Yes, and
I wondered about that last night. She came out and conceded, and I kept thinking, you know what? He's kind of close to 50. Why is she doing this now?
I think they know how to read those numbers. I think they just looked
I think getting 33% in Dallas County will probably let you know that she's not going to get into a runoff. But, you know, and you could see that buzz right about 9:30 when she conceded. I mean, that was probably the most electric moment of the night, because you saw everyone having much more emphatic personal conversations with the person right next to him. And you knew something was up, and eventually the whole audience did, and then, of course, they brought Perry in as a rock star. And, you know, I want to say, though, that so we had Mike Basilis on this morning at Trib Live talking about why the race wasn't close.
Mike Basilis, Perry's pollster.
Thank you. And, you know, he said it was because the media wanted to hype it up.
He basically said, you pinkos in the media fabricated a race that never existed so you could sell papers.
I will.
Isn't that about right?
They spent $17 million on a race that we fabricated. Yeah. Who's the chump?
Yeah. I was too tired this morning to put it up Basilis's grill, I'm afraid.
Well,
so
I will say, though, that I remember back in 2008 at the state convention here in Texas, down in Houston. They had on day one of the convention, it was roll out all the kick-ass Republicans that aren't running for anything this year. So they rolled out Governor Perry, and they rolled out Senator Hutchison, and they rolled out, you know, down the line. Perry was first. He came on stage to rock star, rock show type production qualities, people jumping up and down, you know, throwing underwear on the stage. Senator Hutchison came out, and it was like a wet blanket was thrown over the entire audience. And, you know, and that was a while back, and you could just look at that moment right there and say, well, unless she figures out something to kill his buzz,
that said it all.
It's not going to be a good race. And she never did find anything to kill his buzz.
You know, there hasn't really been a moment, if you look back at the last 12 months, really, if you look at the last 12 months, there wasn't really a moment in this contest, in this story, where you looked at what Hutchison was doing as against what Perry was doing and went, oh, there just wasn't that moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, her rollout in August was horrible. Everybody was talking about what a mess that was. The ad, you know, she had the famous Tony the Tiger ad that looked like she was, you know, backlit and telling us why she ate Frosted Flakes. And you know, it was basically the, I've risked my political career in order to come back and, you know, bless us with her governorship. And I just, there was not a point in this campaign where you went, wow, this is serious.
I feel like we all have a political hangover today going, wait a minute, we did what last night? I mean, we thought this was going to be what? We thought this was going to be competitive. How?
Well, when's the last time you thought it was going to be competitive? I mean, really?
Well, it's been a while, but you know what, though? I mean, remember, I was absolutely, back in my old job, I was promoting openly and with some no small measure of wishful thinking the idea that this was going to be Ollie Frazier.
We are fight promoters.
We even called this race the Thrilla in vanilla, you know, that we thought this was going to be like, you know, the kind of classic epic battle of heavyweights. It never, and I mean never, got off the ground.
You had the vanilla part right.
Right. It wasn't very thrilling, though, in the end. And look, I really believe that we talked earlier today about Rick Dunham's column in the Houston Chronicle today, in which he lists the 10 worst political campaigns in modern Texas history. Hutchison's is number 3,
right,
behind Clady Williams and Bob Krueger, but ahead of Tony Sanchez. If you run a campaign that is perceived to be as bad as or worse than Tony Sanchez's, that's an accomplishment. That may be the only thing she accomplished.
That's a piece of work
in this whole race. You know, I was tempted to say to Matthew Dowd this morning at Trib Live, you know, this campaign was so bad it was McCain bad, except McCain won in Texas.
Right.
You know, at that level. So I don't know. I think we're going to be studying this campaign for years. You know, those of us who gaze at our navels about this stuff will be studying this campaign for years, trying to figure out, did she just get it totally wrong, or did we just get
it
totally wrong?
Well, you know, a couple of things happened, I think, here. One of them was what the Hutchison people will tell you is that the environment was bad, and being from Washington was bad and turned out to be insurmountable. And that may actually be right, even if they had run a great campaign. What everybody else will tell you, including a fair number of Hutchison supporters that we all talk to, is, oh my God, why are they running a campaign like that? They spent their first $5 or $6 million in TV on ads, on transportation, and on the Trans-Texas Corridor, which, as somebody told me, is, you know, that's an issue that peaked 4 years ago and wasn't the top issue at the time that it peaked. It didn't work for Carol Strayhorn against Rick Perry 4 years ago. It didn't work for Kay Hutchison now. And she spent a third of her media buy on that issue.
And I think Deborah Medina took a large chunk of any kind of property rights voters. I mean, for those that were left, that property rights were their number one thing, I think Medina took most of those.
Right. If you're running a campaign that is, we're sick of the governor, raise your middle fingers, Texas, Medina took that vote, mm-hmm. you know, that might or might not have gone to Hutchison. So, I mean, even if she had run a perfect campaign, they say the tide was against her. I think that, you know, part of the reason the tide was against her was because of the way the campaign was framed.
And I'm telling you, the die was cast, I think, the minute that she chose not to resign in December of 08. I know that there are a lot of people who say, oh, it was extremely right for her not to resign. I just think if she had resigned in December, she would have avoided having to come back to a Senate in which she was part of a vast Republican minority, forced to take votes on issues that she had to know the governor would hang around her neck. She would have been able to barnstorm the state, raise money, define herself, and help to define the governor instead of ceding the act of defining herself to the governor. Governor turned her into a caricature because she was not here to define herself.
Whether she resigned or not, she needed to take the first 6 months of last year while Perry was tied up with the legislative session and talk and wring his neck. I mean, she needed to frame the race then. She needed to come out of May when they came into the first filing report for campaign finance of last year was due in July. And she needed to come out with a report that said, you know, while you were messing around with the legislature, I raised a bazillion simoleons and smoked you there.
Right.
I've talked about these issues. I've wrapped these around your neck. And she should have started a steady drumbeat. He should have come out of the legislative session feeling like she had a six-month jump on him.
Right.
And she wasted the jump.
And the fact is, as Emily Ramshaw said last week, Ben, there was plenty of material for Hutchison, whether you like the governor or not, to run against. You know, she could have said, sort of riffing off of his 06 campaign theme, are you proud of Texas? Mm-hmm. Are you proud of the Texas that Rick Perry has led for these last few years? Instead, she chose to run against crony McTollroad, which, you know, was not going to work. Nobody cared.
He was not as good of a caricature as Kay Bailey Hutchison.
Oh, no. You know, crony McTollroad versus Senator Bailout. Senator Bailout's going to get killed.
So the forward roll issue here is whether, you know, what lessons Rick Perry and Bill White picked up that we're going to see. You know, how does what we just saw manifest itself in the general election that goes forward?
But real quick, can I just personally say goodbye to Farrukh Shami? Because he really ended that campaign with a bang, and I, you know.
Like Anna
Nicole
Smith.
There's a special place in my heart for
Like we regarded Anna Nicole Smith at Texas Monthly, he was the gift that kept on giving. I mean, you really kind of miss Farrukh instantly, right?
Right.
That Farrukh rap video, Elise, which I know was one of your high points of this campaign, is
absolutely
truly, that's going to go into Smithsonian.
Well, while you're no longer personally involved, will you be voting for Farrukh Shami as Bum Steer of the Year?
Oh my God.
I
90 to 100 days, $15 million. What you got?
$15 million for how many votes?
For 11%?
Yeah, 11%.
It was 12%, like yeah.
I mean, the guy, in fact, both Hutchison and Chami far exceeded
12.7%.
We're going to have a story soon about this, the bounce per ounce, you call it, Ross, the
right.
amount of money that each candidate spent
unit
to get
pricing
votes.
Is the, how much does each vote
right.
cost, right?
It's not exactly John Connolly spending all that money to get one delegate all those years ago, or no delegates, but it is pretty bad. And Chami was just, from start to finish, a gift to all of us.
Right, so I felt like he deserved those few minutes we just gave him there in the Tribcast. But yes, let's go back to the bigger question about white men.
I wonder if he'd still give me a job in his factory.
Right. So, you know, I guess the next big show is we've got the Bill White, Rick Perry race. Bill White's the first Texas Democrat since Tony Sanchez, who's self-financed largely, who's going to be able to run a well-financed general election campaign. Now, it's still a red state. You know, as everybody will tell you, as the numbers tell you, as history tells you, it's still a red state. But, you know, this is the most competitive Democrat that the Democrats have put forth in a while, whether that turns into something in November.
In fact,
or not.
More so than Sanchez inherently. He's probably the most competitive Democrat since Ann.
I should say, right? Now that we've done our mea culpas for making a fight promotion race out of the Republican primary,
let us turning this into an actual race.
You know, it could be interesting. I mean, a lot of this depends on the environment we're in. You know, it's a bad year to run as a Democrat so far. We'll see how it goes forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. There's still time left for the federal, the federal government and the national economy to not be an albatross around Bill White's neck. I will also say that as the Democrats maybe become more and more of a caricature up in Washington, it's going to be easier for Bill White to distance himself from some of them. I don't think it's going to be very hard to distance himself from Nancy Pelosi here in Texas. And you know, all Texans, even some Texas Democrats, will say, yes, that sounds fine with me. Let's distance ourselves from her.
Question is, can you win as a Democrat by alienating the base to some degree by running from the liberal wing of the party, which is what he would be doing if he said, I'm gonna dump Nancy Pelosi, I'm gonna dump Barack Obama, I'm my own man
in a lot of states,
fainting to the middle.
In a lot of states in George Bush's second midterm.
That's exactly what happened.
A lot of Republicans were like, I don't even know anybody in the White House.
The
I never
mirror
talked to
image.
Those people. I'm
Bush?
Off the, right.
Never
Bush?
Heard of him.
What?
Who's
no,
that
no.
guy?
Right. I'm not on his Christmas card list. I don't even read Christmas cards.
Well, you know, I would say that I would say that you could in Texas, because you have 10 years of Rick Perry, that the maybe the hardcore liberal Democrats are so tired of Governor Perry that given the choice between a Bill White who is running too moderate for their taste and a Governor Perry who they have not liked for 20 years, they're going to be okay to stay at home with the party. But who knows?
Yeah, but even if White does run a perfect campaign and Perry doesn't come after him and do his perfect campaigning kind of thing, doesn't White still have a math problem? I mean,
yeah,
we heard
absolutely.
The pollster talk about today. I mean, there's still like a 55% to 45%
to 7 points
split.
Red.
Yeah.
He'd have to flip votes. And here's the thing. Ross knows this. We've all talked about this. This is going to be a one-third, one-third, one-third race.
Right.
The Republicans are going to be with Perry. Democrats are going to be with White. The fight's going to be over the middle. Who can get to the middle most successfully? Perry has run a campaign that vied with Deborah Medina for most rightward looking. So now suddenly in the general, the governor is going to have to soften up and come back a little bit toward the center,
right.
One imagines.
Right.
In White's case, White is probably a little closer to the center organically than Perry is closer to the center. So
as of
White,
today.
As of today. But as we know from the memo that Dave Carney wrote over the weekend that we got a copy of and published, they intend to turn Bill White into some combination of Nancy Pelosi, Angela Davis, and Jeffrey Dahmer by the time this is over. They're going to say trial lawyer, sanctuary city, consort of Bill Clinton's.
Supports national health care.
Supports national health care.
And is a cannibal? How did Dahmer get in there?
You know, he was mayor pollution.
Bald.
You know, they're gonna do everything they possibly can. They're going to blame the Astros on him.
Right.
They're going to blame
David Carr. Right.
They're going to find a picture of Bill White with Brad Lidge, and that's going to be the end of it. It's a joke for the baseball fans. Look, the fact is that they're going to do everything they can to turn Bill White into a cartoon.
And their advantage is that so much of the state doesn't know Bill White. So they have a real opportunity to come out and define him if Bill White doesn't define himself.
So the first race in this campaign is to define Bill White. Bill White will be trying to define himself as, you know, the kind of person that, you know,
Can he outrun the caricature?
Right. You know, define yourself before the other guy defines you. It's a lesson that even after all those years in politics that Kay learned to her detriment. She got defined as a Washington pork spending yada, yada, yada. She's been on the ballot with Rick Perry since 1990, and all of a sudden they're enemies for, what, 18 months? And then I guess they pledged unity and fealty to each other last night. So what were the biggest surprises last night for you guys?
Tara Rios Ibarra, that was a big TLR, Texans for Lawsuit Reform and trial lawyers fight. I didn't think that she was going to go down. She's a freshman lawmaker out of South Padre Island. She lost narrowly. That was a big surprise.
Well, she lost significantly.
She lost big. She lost 40. She got 42%.
See, this is the last time I checked was 11:30 p.m. last night.
but you're right in that I think while we all expected that race was going to be close, I don't think we expected it to go exactly the way. I'm a believer in karma. Betty Brown. Mm-hmm. Betty Brown.
That was a huge surprise.
If only her name had been more Chinese, she would have won that election.
You got to explain your joke.
That Betty Brown had offended Asian Americans by intimating to someone who was testifying before her
committee
that, you know, who is Asian American, you know, basically she said the equivalent of, if only you people,
you and your citizens,
would make
citizens
your names easier to pronounce or understand.
Americanize them.
Americanize them. I mean, you know, I just think, you know, bad form is ultimately, you know,
and she lost
determinative,
by 108 votes at the most recent count to her former legislative aide, who's really,
even he couldn't take her.
He's a very, very young looking guy, but you know, so far he's winning. So,
yeah,
Ben,
what do you think about big surprises?
Oh, I was kind of surprised that this is a local state board race that Kent Mercer won re-election so easily.
Going away, right?
I mean, you know, he just in that when you compare him to the I'm forgetting his name, former chair of the board,
Don McElroy.
Thank you. Don McElroy lost his re-election bid in kind of a similar race. It was the what has been perceived as the hard right Republican current, you know, incumbent of the school board up against a more moderate Republican who is saying, look, let's take the politics out and get back to education. So that was the McElroy race, and he lost pretty much the same race in the Mercer side, and Mercer wins.
Well, yeah, and in fact, Tynesse Miller, who is the Dallas-based state board member, also lost in a race very similar to the one you described, running against somebody who said, an unknown, a teacher who said state board shouldn't be in a lot of this stuff. So you had two state board members from the rightward flank of the board go down against moderates, but not Mercer.
The funniest thing is, though, Tynesse Miller compared to Mercer and McElroy is a moderate. If you cover the state board,
well,
you
know, everything's relative.
When Tynesse Miller went on the board, she was sort of seen as the hard right member, and she's now the moderate Republican, sort of the voice of reason over there. And but
you know, the idea that two social conservatives, reliable social conservative votes on the state board, which McElroy certainly was, and I think it's fair to say Miller was, are now being replaced by moderates. That really does have the potential to shape the character of that board.
She wasn't one of the hard right votes.
But she was probably with those guys more than not.
Yeah, but she wasn't part of the sort of the critical
Cynthia
block.
Cynthia Dunbar's out, though, and she was
hard
right.
And the argument against this is that Mercer survived easily, and he is certainly one of them.
Now, Dunbar's successor is not yet known because that was going to be a runoff, too.
It's an open seat, right?
There were basically a third, and a third.
But she won't be casting votes. Won't be casting a vote. So. I saved the big one for you, Ross, one of the big surprises of the night, statewide.
I actually thought this was going to happen. I think I was the only one.
You called it.
Looking at me crazy. Victor Carrillo, and this is what happens. You know, there's a Victor Carrillo is the chairman of the Texas Railroad Commission. He was appointed and then won in his own right in 2004. He was running for re-election. Nobody knew he was on the ballot, including a lot of oil and gas people. He just didn't run a campaign. It was under $1 million. The perspective exercise here is that in Texas, to run a week of TV at statewide rates where people recognize you is about $1.5 million, $1.8 million. He didn't have enough money to run a statewide mail campaign. People didn't know he was on the ballot, and so you throw him on the ballot. The guy you throw him on the ballot against is David Porter in a Republican primary. I'm going to overgeneralize, but I got stuff to back it up. In a Republican primary statewide, if you run someone with an Hispanic name against someone with an anglicized name and nobody can discern any other differences between the two, the anglicized name will win. And in fact, Victor Carrillo got walloped in this re-election race.
We'll go back to the Supreme Court race a few years ago where the incumbent Xavier Rodriguez lost to Stephen Smith.
Right.
Can't get more anglicized than that.
Right.
Right? Stephen Smith.
Yeah, this goes on and on. And so the Republicans, you know, sort of have to, you know, answer for this and recover from it. On the other side of the ballot, just point this out just to, as ballast, Linda Chavez Thompson running against Ronnie Earl, both of whom were mostly unknown statewide in a Democratic primary, all other things being equal. The Democratic big vote counties are on the southern border, and Chavez Thompson got 53%
without a runoff,
34%.
Yeah. And I asked Mike Basilis this morning, does your party have a problem with Hispanic candidates? And he basically said no. He kind of did the Ralph Cramden Hamada, Hamada, Hamada for a while. And he said something about Eva Guzman, but of course, Eva Guzman was running against Rose Vela. If Eva Guzman had been running against, you know, Rose
Smith.
Weinstein,
Smith. Yeah.
You know, or something like that, it might have been a different outcome.
Right.
Yeah, Carrillo, I don't know if you've talked to him. He actually had a pretty bad year last year, you know, with his health, brain tumor, and all this stuff. So you
his
know.
Father died. I mean, he did have a rough personal year. But, you know, if you're going to be on the ballot and, you know, you have to run a campaign to win.
Right.
Must campaign to win.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is we had a few House members who lost. But, you know, Rios Ibarra came from kind of the TLR wing of the Democratic Party. Dora Olivo was not that way, right? She was different. Merritt was more of a moderate. In quotes.
Tommy Merritt was one of the 11 Republicans
who helped Strauss get elected
bolted
speaker.
From Tom Craddock and helped Strauss.
But, you know, Betty Brown was not moderate. So, I mean, the balance from a DR standpoint, it's not as if a whole bunch of people from one side of the aisle got beat.
Well, and the balance in the RR sort of deal, if you're thinking of conservative Republicans who used to support Craddock, sort of that wing of the House Republicans, and more moderate, although still conservative Republicans who support Strauss, that's sort of a wash too. I don't see really any big change in speaker politics or in House balance.
And the Democrats keep both seats that just changed hands in the primary. The Republicans keep both seats that just changed hands in the primary. So we're back to being at 78-72 if you assume that the Farabee seat flips to the Republicans.
It's the Wichita Falls seat.
And Hobson, who switched parties from D to R in Jacksonville.
And won handily, by the way.
And won handily, despite the fact that everybody was fretting about whether he would actually make it out of a runoff.
Right.
So you're at 78-72. And unless there are some big surprises going forward, if there are races in which the Republicans can manage to steal back some of those seats Democrats won last time, or the Democrats can pick off somebody who they couldn't beat last time, Haldon Wang will, you know, run against Harper Brown and Irving, and you know, maybe that's a race they think they can win. We're looking at essentially this is the composition of the House. It's not going to be that much different unless there's something out there that we don't see.
Right.
That House is going to look so different, though, just real quick. I mean, next session with so many retirees.
Well, that's true, actually.
I just feel like that freshman class is going to replace so many people, so many familiar faces that we've gotten to see.
McCall,
you know,
Court, Swinford, Gaddis.
We had 8 resignations, 8 volunteers, and then lost, you know, what, 6 last night?
Yeah.
6 incumbents, so we're at 14.
I think 6 or 4. 4? 4?
We lost a lot of chairmen and out of
forgive us our
sleep-deprived
numbers.
I think
right.
4. But, you know, there were also some folks like Delwin Jones who were in a runoff.
Right. We've got
Norma Chavez in a runoff.
Several runoffs going forward.
What about I think that the House thing is really pretty interesting, but as I step back and look at the whole landscape, we didn't learn too much yesterday that we didn't know. Maybe we learned that the Tea Party as a movement rather than a party is more sound and fury signifying nothing than something.
Well, and I think it's interesting, even with the idea of Governor Perry, you know, pushing and talking about this statewide movement to, you know, be against Washington, D.C., and, you know, just focus on Texas, that you had the races on the Republican side where you had either the moderates getting beaten or the hardline conservatives getting beaten. I mean, it doesn't, Governor Perry would like to kind of spread the umbrella over the whole state as to what Republicans want, you know, you go district to district. And I mean, same thing on the Democratic side, but Perry, I'm using Perry just because he was talking about it last night. You know, you have, like we said, Betty Brown losing and then Tommy Merritt losing and then, a moderate moderate Republican in Chuck Hobson.
Right,
winning easily, so it's not like there's a I don't know. I mean, those are just some examples to say. So, is there this great movement?
I think there's a nuance in here. There were the candidates, generally speaking, it's, you know, another overgeneralization, but the candidates in the Republican primaries who embraced the Tea Party people and went to their things and acknowledged them and kind of tipped their hats did pretty well. and the ones who didn't. There's a one set of mailers that went out. I know Brian Epstein did this. I know a couple of other political consultants did it. If you were a Republican running a Brian Epstein campaign, they had this little button on their mailers that said strongly supports Republican and Tea Party values.
Yep.
On the Republican Party things, just tip the hat. Perry in his acceptance speech, or when he's claiming the nomination last night,
Tea Party Patriots.
Tea Party Patriots. Tip his hat. If you acknowledge them, if you paid your tribute, you got a pass. If you didn't, Bert Solomon's almost lost election to somebody nobody's ever heard of. Bert got about 52-53% of the vote up in Carrollton, and he sort of, you know, ran mad at these guys.
It's the respect must be paid election.
That's right. Pay tribute.
That's what it turns out to be, and we'll see how that ends up affecting the fall.
Evan, any last word before we close this out?
I just want to say I think that the Trib staff did a great job last night in presenting maps and returns and everything, and we are all tired, so if we publish something stupid at any point in the next couple of days, give us a break.
If you have any comments or questions, podcasts@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Ben, my name is Elise. Thank you for listening.